Hi everyone, here I am with some thoughts on chapter four, when we're really digging in now to the ramifications of what the IEP stands for. Through IDEA, of course, always with the lens towards our law and ethics, and making sure that we're thinking about this document as the cornerstone really of all we do in special education. And so in this module of basic principles of the IEP, in thinking about what you're learning in your reading in chapter four, I want to bring your attention to Andrew F. versus Douglas County School District in 2017. We know from that case, which was fairly recent with regard to the law, as the scales of justice turn ever so slowly, we do know that the IEP is not a form document. It is not simply a list of things that you may do, and it is certainly not a menu of things that you can choose from. It is really intended to be an agreement between the family and the school district. And according to IDEA, we must have six major principles that are incorporated into our agreement. And really, number one, as you've been learning, is a free, appropriate public education. In addition to that, an appropriate evaluation. Then, of course, the IEP, the Individualized Education Program, a least restrictive environment obligation, as well as meaningful parent and student participation, and the procedural safeguards. So those are the six major principles of IDEA that must be followed in the reauthorization of 2004. In your reading, this of John's, the living document piece of the IEP is what's incredibly important. So we must come together as a collaborative team and communicate with each other to really determine what is needed from us as the district in our specially designed instruction that is reflected in the IEP that comes along with accommodations. In addition to that, specific and individualized instruction and goals and objectives that are measurable for the student. So in this module, you're going to be doing some meeting, IEP meeting reading about when the IEP team meets. You've done some work around viewing some videos of when, you know, and what an appropriate IEP meeting looks like and what one doesn't look like. And in addition to that, this module, you will be looking at the Rhode Island Department of Education guidelines for special education and what the IEP even looks like. I think it's important to put eyes on the document that we're talking about. In addition to that, there is a discussion board Padlet for your learning and reflection about what you are reading and listening to in this module. And so in chapter four, Johns talks about several very important pieces of the process of the IEP. We know that we get to a discussion about the IEP after another kind of beginning process occurs. That is, that the student is demonstrating some level of challenge in school or perhaps in early childhood, birth to three, and they come into the public school at age 3 to 22, that part of IDEA is what we're discussing specifically in this class with regard to public schooling. And so there's a referral made. And then at the referral, we listen as the school-based IEP team to make certain that we're making good decisions about students and we're listening and to determine whether or not we suspect a disability. And then we're moving to, in that evaluation process, that fair, appropriate evaluation, we're looking to determine whether or not that child is eligible for special education under the 13 disability categories under IDEA. And if so, if that student requires specially designed instruction provided by a special educator. If so, then, of course, an IEP is developed and a program is developed as well for that student that is data-based, based on the evaluation, based on all of the pieces of the puzzle that come together in that school-based meeting, school-based team meeting with meaningful participation of the family. One of the challenges that even some of our seasoned special educators have is what is intended by the prior written notice. You'll hear that a little bit in your reading and discussion. The purpose of the meeting is what is discussed in the prior written notice. You are giving that notice to the family before you really kind of move forward in the IEP process. So it's basically what the district refuses or proposes for the student. I think refuse is a strong word to use, and sometimes it confuses what the prior written notice is intended to do, but it really is simply a notice to the family about what the district is going to do. And typically that is to initiate an IEP, or it could be to change placement or propose a further evaluation. It could be a number of things. In addition to that, in John's, we talk about the fact that the school-based team can come to the IEP meeting with a draft IEP. And what's important is that that is solely a draft, that it is an important piece for the team to have something to work off of. It is important to provide that draft to the family so that they have some preparation about what is going to be discussed, which means that the school-based team needs to have, their act together and not be, writing IEPs on the fly. And what I mean by that is, some of the challenges that can happen is copy and paste goals and objectives. Troubles that can happen are, inadvertently putting a different name on the IEP because you're in a hurry to get this, document together. It needs to be well planned and well orchestrated, as well as having a well run and very productive meeting. So when you come to the IEP with a meeting with a draft document, it really helps to ground the team in the discussion. It also gives the family the opportunity to suggest IEP goals. Now, I've been a longtime director, and I've seen lots of things in the IEP meeting, right down to parents coming with their own draft IEP. Those are really careful considerations and conversations that you're having, because you need to make sure you're getting families participating, but you want to make sure that it's collaborative in nature, that the whole team is discussing the document. So making sure that if you're coming with the draft IEP, you have draft written all over it, the family understands it's a draft, you're not predetermining any services or placement, you're not, saying before the meeting that, oh, this is the student that's going into our behavior program. You don't know that, right? That is necessary to be at the meeting to have that conversation, because otherwise that would be predetermining services, and that's against the law. Several times you may come across a member of the team that cannot make it for whatever reason on a particular day, and we would use an excusal for that, and so that the family would agree to perhaps the occupational therapist not being there that day or whatnot. If you had a particular day where more than one or even two individuals could not be there for the meeting, I would really reconsider changing the date of that meeting if at all possible. It's hard if, more than two members are not there. And of course, you want to make sure that you have your necessary members as well. John's talks also about important IEP timelines. That's of critical importance and vary a little bit state to state. So please make sure when you're looking in this module at the Rhode Island information to take a look at that. those dates that are very important as a special educator, particularly when you're first starting out. It's always good to refer back to them. Johns also talks about consent, the informed consent for special education services. So when we find a child eligible for the first time for special education, a parent needs to have, of course, all of the information necessary to make the decision to consent to placement in special education. That's called initial consent. If the parent does not agree that they feel like their child does not need to be in a special education program or have an IEP, the district would not file for due process because they are indicating to the family that they have found the child eligible. The child is eligible to receive special education services that are absolutely available in district, but the parent needs to consent to that. And if the parent refuses consent, we don't go to due process. We just make note of that. Parent signs off that they're declining services at that time. And we can always go back and revisit that as an IEP team should anything change, such as the parent having a change of heart. But it is not a violation of IDEA if FAPE is made available to the student. You can always also amend a living document, this IEP, for example. You can always amend when or if something changes, you come back to the table, and we make sure our families know that, that it's okay if something changes. If we have different evaluation results that we must consider as a school-based team, we need to come back to the table. John's mentions Jefferson County Board of Ed versus Lolita S. in 11th Circuit Court in 2014, where the student's IEP goals were not adapted to meet the needs of the student. That is a huge red flag. Like I said earlier, if you have an IEP that does not match the student, so if a family is reading this document and don't recognize their own child in the document, it's a problem. And it can really cause a lot of mistrust in the team and a feeling of, kind of not sure if you even know my child. And that's never a good foot to be on with a family. So we want to make sure that if a child, for example, in this example out of John's, if the child's in ninth grade but reading on a first grade level, we cannot expect that we're going to be able to close that gap in one annual year. In one IEP. So we have to be really looking at what is the specially designed instruction that's needed? What is necessary for this student to succeed? Where is this student right now? We're not going to hold them to a standard that in light of their circumstances is not appropriate for them. And in John's, as I call it, the series of unfortunate events, whenever we are planning an IEP, if we have discuss something at the meeting, but it's not in writing, that becomes a challenge. We need to make sure that it's captured in the meeting minutes. If your state and district require meeting minutes, in Connecticut, where I am now, we provide a little bit of a summary. But while I was in Rhode Island, there were page-long meeting minutes, and sometimes that can become contentious too. And I can talk a little bit about that later on. But you want to make sure that the people who you are asking to do services or requesting or recommending are there at the meeting. If you talk about a one-to-one para, you need to have the data that supports that need. You need to discuss that clearly as to where that person or adult support would be utilized for that student. And there should be some type of fade plan over time as the student gains independence as we're teaching them skills. In the text, the principal didn't even come to the meeting the first time around. And so that level of miscommunication, not knowing what was discussed, lack of closure on the part of the IEP team, any service provider that is giving services through the IEP needs to be invited to that IEP meeting. And if you're going to recommend an evaluation, you want to make sure that that person is there to talk to that. So occupational therapist, speech language pathologist, if you're recommending any evaluation and that provider is not there, that's also not a good look as well. They're not part of the conversation. They can't offer their expertise. And then, of course, we have the exemplary SLP in John's that brings everyone together in a collaborative conversation, loops in the principal so that they know what's happening, talks with the resource teacher, and is basically doing well, right? And that's where we want to be. We want to do the best we can to make sure that everyone is informed, that any questions that families have are answered, any expectations that families have are clearly discussed, and that information is communicated to them properly so that they have a very clear understanding of what the services are in the IEP, how they're going to be measured, what the goals are, and that they have meaningful input into what it is that the child's program looks like. You will find that families will often have concerns about, you know, where the services happen. Is it pull out? Is it an inclusion model? Are there co-teachers? How is my child going to work in the general education classroom? Will they be missing anything in general education? So all of those pieces are really critical when we talk about planning our IEP. And I hope that as you move through the module, you will find some more information to reflect on. And I can't wait to hear what you think.